Hi, and welcome to Stories of Climate Change Hope, the podcast that brings you a little bit of hope every other week. My name is Steffen Schwartmann. Today we listen to the story of Henry Lyonga. Henry is about to graduate from his master program in English and American Cultural Studies from Humboldt University in Berlin, Germany. Henri is a creative writer, an essayist, and poet. Hey Henri, how are you doing?
Hi Stefan, I'm good. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good as well. Yeah, today everything will be about writing, and you are a writer, and I wanted to know, what do you usually write?
When I decide to write, which is something I do almost every day, I don't sort of limit myself with the question of what I want to write about. Like, I just take a seat at the table, apply myself to pen and paper, and most of the time something emerges. And so, but generally, if I am to categorize my work, it would be that I write a lot about immigration, about loss, about sort of heritage, about where I come from, Cameroon. And in many ways, I write about a past lost and a future unknown. So what I write about is really kind of, I think there is a path that I am trying to forge by writing, and it is almost always related to my past, my country, my people, things like that.
Okay, so yeah, that sounds like it's always somehow related, like personally, to you. So how does yourself kind of get into the story or get into the pieces that you write? Like, does it come naturally, or is there like does it come naturally, or is there a kind of thought process that you go through to get into this kind of state, or to connect yourself more deeply towards what you want to write?
So I do write a great deal about my family, right? I think there's this thing that I read when I was quite young. It's like, you write the things you know. Like, that's where a writer's job begins. Like, you start writing from what you know and sort of propel yourself into other things, right? Things you do not know, things that sort of emerge by sort of wanting to know more about yourself and about your surroundings and about, like, the people who raised you. And for me, it's been really easy to, like, tap into that space, because I think there is a lot to really put to paper when you allow yourself to be connected to a place, a people, a culture. And I get to do that in my writing, and it is mostly really just about remembering the past, remembering the faces of people who raised you, remembering what they said, remembering, like, wisdoms that were imparted, remembering, you know, just, you know, kind of their constitutions, and also how those places that you danced through and played through when you were a kid, what you think about them today, and how you envision them, and how you kind of recall them in your memory. So it is really a lot about, like, memory work, a lot about just, you know, trying to get back to a time where life was perhaps a little bit easier. I don't know, but yeah, it's a lot about remembering, memory work.
Yeah, that really, if I can describe it how I understood what you said, it sounds a little bit like you can use writing as a kind of way to kind of conserve your memory and your thoughts, your feelings from the past, So I imagine, yeah, like maybe it's like all the pieces that you wrote is maybe like a personal library, you know, that when you read another story or a poem that you wrote, that you immediately, yeah, are drawn back to the time, the moment you wrote it, and you immediately know what it was like.
Yes, I really like the idea of like a conservation of memories that you kind of mentioned. I feel like in life, in most cases, we are always trying to connect the dots. And that is what I try to do with writing as well. Like if I am in a place at a time and I am thinking about something peculiar, right? For instance, if I'm thinking about like what I learned about love by watching my great grandparents be married for several decades, I always sort of see myself going back to the past, like really thinking about like what was taught to me about love from infancy, right? Like how did I experience love? How did I watch it around me? How was it perceived, and how was it instilled in my subconscious, but also in my everyday life, right? And so I am tapping a lot into my past to like really question my past as well, but also to like really pull things from that moment, from that time, to bring them back into the future. So yeah, it's a lot about like sort of connecting the dots and archiving memories, I think.
Yeah, like me personally, I wouldn't call myself a writer. I mean, sometimes I write down my thoughts, and yeah, rarely I have a moment where I have an idea and I must write it down. Somehow writing down really also clarifies and manifests an idea, like an idea for study related or just an idea, like thoughts that came to my mind, how I see the world or how I see the climate crisis, things that I can do in my activism. And yeah, then it's also, like you said, connecting the dots somehow. Mm. And hoping that, yeah, by writing it down, you know, you can kind of save that thought. Well, otherwise, if I don't write it down, then it's probably just gone, you know. Mm. It's like when you dream, and often enough, when you wake up, you don't remember what your dream was about.
I mean, totally, that makes total sense, and I do strongly believe that we all have like ways of like conserving our lives, our memories, and I do that by writing. You probably do that by other means. Like I think there are several ways that sort of that resonate with all with each of us differently, right? And so the idea of like writing also, I of course I write, of course I have written things and published things, but like the notion of being a writer is a work in progress. I think it's not something that I have fully claimed yet, but I'm certainly using writing as a conduit to sort of connecting to the past. And so in that regard, writing is very vital to me, very essential, and it is very necessary. Yeah.
Yeah, now I would like to share something. I would like to say that, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I suddenly had a thought, you know, and I wanted to write it down, and it was sort of interesting because it was really just the feeling that I had like maybe a year ago or 2 years ago. And I was really like surprised, like, okay, how, why do I think about this right now? This is how I felt before, and now I don't exactly feel like this anymore. But it was really interesting, and I wrote it down, and yeah, I would like to read it.
Please.
It's, I don't even know what to call it. Maybe it's a poem, but it doesn't rhyme. Yeah. And I called it Only Together. I'm imagining the inner city without any cars. I am imagining that the song of the birds is louder than the noise of passing cars and passing trucks. It is difficult to imagine in a time of despair. Staying hopeful is the key. But what if I am on and on, confronted with the opposite? What if, again and again, I see the same news? We are going down. Emissions are rising. We are going down. Higher frequency of extreme events. We are going down. More drought events coming your way. We are going down. Is it possible to stay hopeful? Stay hopeful and do what I can? Do my part for the transition, for the transformation of society. Will it be enough? Can it be enough? As I am staying hopeful, am I just a dreamer? Am I just able to continue because I live in a different world, a world where things are possible? When so many voices keep telling me, it is impossible, and discourage me from continuing. And then sometimes there's a friend telling me, a stranger telling me, this is good stuff, keep doing it. I cherish these voices. They help me keep me going. It is my own conviction of being, of doing what is right, of doing what feels right. And without others, it is not possible to withstand that strong discouragement, that strong attack on my belief. Only together with you can I continue. And only together with you we can achieve change. Only together. Yeah, that was sort of the thought that I had a couple of right. weeks ago.
I love that. I think it does speak. There are questions there, really, very, I think, essential questions. You're asking questions about positionality, you're asking questions about privilege and privileges, you're asking questions of yourself. If you feel like you're present in the moment, and there's a lot to go on there, and I would really like to understand perhaps how you came to this piece, and also what it means to you after, like, reading it out loud and sort of putting it down on paper, like, what was the process and how and did it resonate in any special way with you as the writer?
Yeah, it was really funny because it was basically like I woke up, I had this feeling I need to put something down, and I did not. Yeah, that's maybe also interesting to note that sometimes, like, I don't want to write something down, but I will just make mm-hmm. a voice recording and speak from my mind, you know, and then I will write mm-hmm. it down afterwards. So it is kind of more, I don't know, more direct coming from me. Like, it's so really in the moment. I'm making the recording, I press record, mm-hmm. and I'm talking. And so it's kind of like, I need to talk now. I need to formulate my thoughts mm-hmm. immediately. Yeah, like, actually, it makes me really hopeful writing this and reading this, because, like, yeah, like, maybe 1 year ago or 2 weeks ago, I felt really depressed, you know, and I didn't know what to do or how to talk to people about the climate crisis. But now it is much better because I have things that I am actually doing to foster some kind of change, you know, with the podcast or with other volunteering projects. So, yeah, it kind of basically emphasizes what I went through before, and now realizing that, okay, I just need to be active to feel better. And staying hopeful doesn't mean you think, you know, you think that everything is going to be fine, but it means that you know what you do is right, and you have the belief that now what you do is really worthwhile and something good. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It does resonate with me. I think when it kind of feels almost the same. Like when I'm writing, I'm the most myself, because in those moments, I am not just writing, but I'm also questioning. I'm also sort of trying to gauge where I am in life, where I am in the moment. Like, am I happy? Am I connecting with my relatives as much as I could? Am I having the right conversations? Am I asking the right questions? Am I getting the answers that I desire? Am I also being good to someone? Am I giving back? Those are the things that I also, am I connecting with the ancestors? I think if you read my work, you know that there's a lot about it that feels very spiritual. There's like a kind of a spirituality that is sort of inherently Black, which means that there is a commune with the ancestors, the dead and the living, right? And I'm always trying to make that connection as well. I think for a long time I have been like always trying to be very aware of this aspect that that the dead are still with us, and that that much of the experiences that we had with them does not die because they died. I think this memories are still there. They exist, and we carry them on, and we move forward with them. And so in many ways we have to sort of live with that awareness, and I do that in my writing.
I would love to know more about maybe one piece that you wrote, Henri. I know there's one article that you wrote. It's called Assimilation, Willfully Forgetting to Remember Who You Are. It's a little bit long, so maybe it's too long to read it out. But would you like to share your thoughts that you had when you wrote it, or what is the article about? What is important to you?
Okay. Yes. Assimilation, Willfully Forgetting to Remember Who You Are. It's really about like me asking myself the question of, who am I and what have I become based on the questions that have been asked of me, to me, about me, right? Which is, when I meet people, there are certain questions that they ask me, like really basic questions, but also really sometimes very, very pain-inducing questions, right? Which sort of have over the time sort of led me down this spiral of like just having to not dig deeper, just having to be very surface-based in the replies that I give, right? Because I know deep down that these people who are asking these questions are not really interested in my well-being, or in, they're not really of the sort of, they are not really invested in how I live my life, in the outcome, and in the space that I find myself. So in doing so, in being asked these basic questions, I have, it's become something to me that I too have now become a person who plays into those questions, right? And now playing into those questions has sort of left me completely unaware of who I am, because I have not had to deal with serious questions about my person for a long time. And so this essay is basically what happens when you start asking yourself those difficult questions, those really essential questions, right? And how much you get to see of yourself when you ask those questions. Actually, the piece started because I had created a list of questions that I get asked by people, and I would like to read you some of those questions, and so that you kind of get the idea what those questions are, what questions I have to deal with. So it's like,
Please share some of the questions.
Yeah, so some of the questions are, why are you here? Were you born here? Where do you come from? Did you come over on a boat? Will you ever go back? Where is Cameroon? Is it a shithole country? Where are your parents? Did they sell everything they own to send you over here? How much do you owe Judy? Do you fuck your debts away? Did you sleep on the floor again last night? Will I find peace in places inside you? How does it feel to walk in the shadows, to be black, to be nothing at all? Where is your voice? Why do you have to struggle so much? Why don't you let me help you? Can I touch it? Will I like it? Is it really as big as they say it is? Did they take your skin away? Did they sew it up? Does it hurt? Those cars, what are they? Who put them there? Who taught you about sex? Which dating app did you download today? Were you raised by a single mother? Did she feed you everything she had? Is she angry, tired, educated, on the run? Who is your father? Do you know his name? Did he give your mother a ring and call her Eve? Did he love her? Did he love you? Did he touch you in places, or was it an uncle? Did it hurt? Did you like it? Did you ever heal? Why did you stay quiet for so long? Why are you crying? Why are you so broken? Yes.
Well, and who asked these questions? Like relatives, strangers, friends, or someone else?
Mostly strangers. I find that friends do not really put themselves in a position of asking questions that could trigger you. I think friends are invested in your well-being. They are invested in you feeling good and you sort of not feeling uncomfortable. But strangers do not have the luxury of doing that because they are not in your life consistently, right? So yes, I have had people ask me questions like this, and I have really wondered how they feel comfortable asking these questions. But like, because most of the questions are very leading, they are leading towards certain things that we already know. A lot of them is about me being black. A lot of them is about questioning my legitimacy, why I am here, what I hope to gain by being here. And so most of those questions, I honestly do feel are directed towards trying to get me to react to something. I mean, honestly, to be asked the question of if I was raised by a single mother, like, I mean, that is kind of a preconceived notion that people have of black families, that they are not really unified families. People always think that you're either being raised by a single mother or by grandmother, that parents, dads are always MIA. And so, you know, it plays into sort of the politics of being black and like what people have been taught for centuries about what black people are, about what black families look like, about you know, the dynamics that that people think are the dynamics of active black families. So I think most of those questions are born from that place.
Most of the questions you read out are really insensitive, and even I guess it also requires a special kind of person asking this. Like, at least I think I wouldn't ask a stranger these questions, because I would already think, you know, it's kind of provocative and maybe triggers that person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I wonder, like, what is the circumstances, you know, because, like, did you meet someone and you just started chatting somehow, or they just approach you and immediately ask this? Okay. Like, it's difficult. When would this come up, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, for me, difficult to imagine.
Yes, I totally get that. I have been in situations where, like, okay, so I would go to, like, a student party or something, before COVID, of course, and I would be around people, right? And a conversation will ensue, right? And then somebody will say something like, wow, I did not know the universities in Africa. Somebody would be like, you're so well spoken for a person who comes from an African country. And I would be left, like, dumbfounded, because I'm like, but you are in academia, you're supposed to know these things. Like, you're supposed to know that the world doesn't just revolve around Europe. Like, there are a lot of other things that are happening at a lot of other places that are very well progressed, and you know, so usually it is people who meet me for the first time, and some people will just walk up to me and ask these questions. But I think most of the questions that I have read today have been encounters with people for the first time who met me at gatherings, at moments where we socialized due to sort of university and things like that. And so people would ask me these questions.
Yeah, like you said, you are a student here and you would expect such a high education that people wouldn't ask those questions, you know, and, like, they would know better. I guess that also just underlines that we always need to talk about, like, when it comes to discrimination, that you always need to speak out, because otherwise it seems really like, yeah, even though you think someone is educated, they are not, or there's something really missing that you would expect they would know.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I totally know that. I totally understand that as well. I think in the past year, I have grown more confident in, like, really calling out nonsense when I see it. It's like, if somebody asks me such a question, a very leading question, particularly a question about, like, people who, in my family, like, question of, were you raised by a single mother? And I'm more vocal now. I'll be like, what does that have to do with the conversation we're trying to have right now? Like, you know, like, what are you trying to get at there? You know, I think I've grown more confident and in speaking up about those, about, like, you know, in those moments as well. I think for a long time, I just did not say anything. For a long time, I just walked away. For a long time, I just did not want to give people the expected reaction, right? So, because I think if I had reacted, they would have thought that is exactly who we thought you were. You know, there is this idea that black people are less cultured, that they are prone to active violence, that they blow up really quickly. And I think in many cases, people expect that of you. People expect you to just, like, flare up and just, like, but I've always met those moments with a lot of patience and a lot of just a lot of groundedness that I have been very just quiet about them. I have walked away, I have stood and taken it. I have, yeah, but it's never easy to be asked things like this, because in many ways those are triggering questions. Like, you have to think about your past, you have to think about decisions you made, you have to think about things you've lost. Like the question about my dad, you know, I lost my dad when I was 11. Like, those questions bring back those memories, you know. Like, it's not just, those questions are not frivolous, they are not empty. Like, they are questions that cut deep, you know. So yeah.
So how do these questions relate to the article that you wrote, the article that you presented?
Exactly. So I did read these questions to explain how I got to writing this this piece about assimilation and the sort of willfully wanting to forget. I think in that piece I am trying to work through these questions. I'm trying to kind of take some time to fully see myself, to fully allow myself to realize the choices that I have made, to make peace with them, to come to terms with a past lost and a future of hope. You know, that's basically what I try to do in most of my writings, of negotiating the past and the future and the present.
Yeah, Henri, so you just talked about the concept of hope, and the podcast is called Stories of Climate Change Hope. So is hope concept that you always think about, or is that something, like, is it always on your mind, or like, how does it influence you, hope?
Hope is a big thing, I think. You know, when we do things, we have expectations, and we expect things to align in our favor. We expect things to work out to benefit us, and hope is something that I've always held closely to. The hope that someday I will be able to walk free without like having to worry about being black. Hope that someday I will be able to make peace with the notion that I have lost so many people in my life, and still there is this strength to forge ahead. The hope that all the choices I have made will not will materialize, and so there is a lot of hope in the things we do, in the things I write about, in the things that interest me. So hope is a huge it's a huge sort of fundament that I ride on. Yes.
And how do you stay hopeful? What gives you hope? Or are you hopeful for the future or for yourself?
I am hopeful when I sit to write, I am hopeful. When I make certain choices, I am hopeful. When I talk to my niece, who is 7 years old now, I am hopeful because she has like wild ideas of the future, of what she wants her life to become, and what she's walking and working towards. She is such a bubble of light, and that can only sort of further strengthen the idea of hope. When I think about like my aspirations, I'm hopeful, and in many ways, hope is what gets me to do the things that I do, because I expect that for the work I put in, that they'll materialize, that I'll have something out of it, and so it is that hope that sort of really pushes me forward. And so, am I hopeful? Yes, I am hopeful. Certainly not every day. There are days where things are very bleak. There are days where things are just very not hopeful. But generally, I am a very hopeful person, and I work towards it as well.
I think you also had a question.
Right. Do you ever worry about? Do you worry that things that you aspire to will not turn out as you hope them to become? Which is why you actually hope a little bit harder. Like, is that something that resonates with you, that you hope like extra hard so that things will turn out, you know, to be what you want them to be?
Well, sometimes I worry. I do many, many things that I don't worry so often, and I'm much better now. But, well, I think I don't have like an exact idea, you know, of who I want to be after I graduate and what kind of job I want to do, or my family situation. I would say that because I have so many different interests, that I'm also still, I don't know for how long, I'm still kind of open, you know, to what I can do and where I will put my most effort when I start working like full time. So I don't really worry, and I also have a really close web of friends, and I have a close connection to my family. So whenever I start worrying, or whenever I have some doubts, I, you know, there are always people I can talk to, so many people that would listen to me, and I, you know, they don't need to like advise me or do recommendations. Oh, you know, you can do this, and then you maybe worry less. But just listening, I think it's the most important thing. And I have noticed this so many times when I did the same, when I listened to friends just really expressing, you know, their emotions, the things that went through their mind, like personal struggles with someone else, you know, sometimes really just listening, they can feel, okay, I'm really listening now and I'm trying to understand. And for a couple of cases, you know, it was so obvious that just by talking, they found the solution, you know, themselves. They realized, oh, maybe I can do this. Maybe I just talk with her and maybe it will work out. And that's so priceless, you know. And in these moments, I'm like, it could be so easy, you know. You can just... You as a person, if you really want to get to know someone, okay, maybe you also somehow you need to ask the right questions, or somehow you need to be able to show the other person how invested you are. Like, now I'm taking all the time just to listen to you. But then I'm really amazed, you know, by some of the conversations I had. And this, yeah, makes me worry less, actually. Yeah. Because it's a really good question. So how is it for you, like, when you think about the future? Do you worry a lot?
I think there is a lot to worry about. But also there is a lot we should be thankful for, right? When I think of the future, I am, certainly there are things that trouble me, which is like, I'm thinking about like the refugee crisis in Cameroon, where I still have relatives, which is very worrying. I am thinking about the state of democracy in Cameroon, which is very worrying as people are dying. I'm thinking about the state of things globally, how sort of democracy seems to be losing its hold, right? I'm thinking about how sort of people of color and black people are vilified, and how extremists are seemingly turning up the heat and trying to really fight progressive ideas and ideals. I am worried in those regards, and I'm worried in how that will impact people that look like me. I'm worried about how my niece will grow into becoming a woman and what she's going to have to deal with, because she is she's in a place where she will always be the minority. I worry a lot about those things, and I try to have conversations to alleviate that worry. I speak to people, I engage in conversations with people who understand the struggles, people who are working around the struggles. But there's in between the worries, there is always, you know, those moments where we are like, okay, good, we came so far, we've done this progress that is visible, and that things are getting better, not nearly as they should be, but that we are seeing movements, right? So of course I worry for the future, but I am also hopeful for the future, and I'm ready for the future in many ways.
After listening to you and what I just said, I feel really naive, and I can also really see that somehow of what I just said, how I expressed myself, that really, and what you said really makes me aware that in this moment I was kind of ignorant of all the many things that are worth worrying about. I don't know if I am just, I just didn't mention it, although there are so many things, you know, that also for me are worth worrying about. I guess maybe it's because I don't know, I'm a little bit maybe in a activist bubble, and that, you know, like there are things that are really difficult to change. And what I believe is, you know, like whatever you do now, it's the best you can do for this time. Like you cannot turn back time. So I think that is what somehow makes me hopeful and less worrisome if I see people who are really doing their best, like you. You have so many different projects. Like today we are talking about writing, but we could do and talk about so many different aspects. You are in the Black Student Union. You are in an organization that is criticizing the Humboldt Forum. You're also doing urban gardening now, and so many other things. So when I also, you know, hear you talk and hear what you're doing, that you're tackling so many different issues, but so many difficulties, that it makes me less worrisome, because I see there are people like you, you know, who want to do something, who want to change something.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Also, thank you for calling out the privilege of like not having to like worry about the things that I worry about. I think it's not anything that you are supposed to fault yourself for. I think you are aware, and we talk about these things off camera as well, or off the audio conversation that we are recording now, since we are in a active friendship, and I know where your heart is. I know I've and you're also very you're doing a lot of work. You're fighting different battles. You are, you know, you're advocates for climate change. Speaking on those issues there, and I think worrying about I think it is quite difficult to not do anything about like things that make our lives difficult to live, right? So I think we are trying to make better our lives, but also making it better for the next generation, right? So when I do the kinds of things that I do, I'm always thinking of my nieces. I am not a dad yet. I do not have a family in that way. And I'm thinking, if I were to have a family, what would I need for my kids to be happy? What would I need for them to be able to go through life and live life to the fullest without having to worry about racism and other isms, right? And it starts with us. It starts with us saying we have to advocate for change. We have to do that difficult work of mobilizing and organizing for change. And I think I've learned a lot from the Black Student Union at Humboldt, which is that we have this bi-weekly meetings where we discuss our issues, and I get to be around other Black students and students of color, and we get to talk about our issues. We get to find ways of moving forward. We get to really speak about what we want, what we need to be able to move forward, and what sort of what allyship will look like with other parties who will eventually help us get to that place, because it's not a kind of work that one does alone, right? I mean, most of it you organize alone, you meet people, you start organizing with them, and like it's not a work that is done by single hand. It's a meeting of the minds, and everyone is doing what they can, lifting from whatever position they can. And I think it is being really, for me, it is, I really love the idea of being in community, creating communities that take up space to make space. Thinking about the kind of work that we are trying to do, the things we're trying to accomplish, and thinking about the future, it is really grounded by hope. It's grounded by being hopeful of the fact that the future can be changed, of being hopeful that meaningful change can be reached, and that lives can be made better by being active, by mobilizing, by working, and by advocating consistently.
When you mobilizing, yeah, you also need words. And again, coming back to writing, you need to phrase things a certain way to mobilize people, to get in touch people. So maybe you have an idea, like when you remember back when you actively started to write down your thoughts or stories, do you like reflecting on that? Maybe do you have a tip for the listener who joined the conversation and listened in and maybe has really somehow the urge to write or is thinking about, oh, I would love to write more? Like, what would you tell him or her?
I would say make it a habit. Start writing now and make it a habit in that you carve out time to write every day. I do this 20-minute write-ups that I do basically every day, which is that for 20 minutes I sit still and sit in front of a notebook and a pen, and then like write. And so you in those 20 minutes I may write about like the most frivolous, the most like nonsensical things, but the point is that I am writing, right? It is to learn a habit. It is to learn something that one can sustain. So make it a habit, write every day, then also do a lot of reading. Reading is where a writer's work begins, right? So you're only as good a writer as the books you read, because I think in many ways avid readers are great writers. Like if you think of a Toni Morrison, who was an editor for many years, and she in her work she was, you know, reading other writers and helping them craft their words and their stories, and then from there she became a writer and she became a Nobel laureate in literature. Like it is this sort of constant reading and constantly opening up yourself to different dimensions and opportunities that make good writers, and practice makes the best writers. That is what I have understood over the years of writing, and that is what the people who mentor me in my head, who are like Toni Morrison and Chinua Achebe and Wole Soyinka and Chimamanda Adichie, those are people that I've listened to who say you have to consistently write, like make it a habit and read as much as you can to fortify your mind. That's what I'll tell them.
Thank you. Is there one specific book that you would recommend?
That is very interesting. So when you speak to a Black writer, particularly an African-American writer, there are a few books that have sort of led to the emergence of many writers. Like this one book by Toni Morrison, The Bluest Eye is one of them. Song of Solomon is also another one. Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart is another one. Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings is another one. Like there are a lot of books that are just grounding in how they twist words and string sentences in such important and poetic ways that will instantly like just open up your mind if you're aspiring to write. I do read a lot of poetry. I'm reading a lot of like Morgan Parker's Magical Negro, Morgan Parker's There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyonce, Eve L. Ewing, Electric Arches, Dana Smith, Homie. Like there are a lot of writers that I'm reading. There's this point that I'd like to make, because for me, particularly as a Black person who has been socialized Western in many ways, like even when I was still a kid in Cameroon and I was going to school, we were being taught with books that were sort of written by writers from Europe. And so I left school without any deeper understanding of my own country's history, of like the things that I was supposed to know. So what I'm doing now, as I am trying to decolonize myself, is I am solely reading works by writers of color, by writers on the margins, by disabled writers, by women writers, by Black writers. So most of the recommendations that I have given are Black writers, because that is what I am doing actively now to be able to get back the history and that I was robbed of as a young kid, right? So I am involved and making myself sort of read along those lines. Not that I am not interested in white literature. I have been interested in white literature for a long time. Like I have, they have accompanied me as I grew into a person. But I am letting the white canons go. I am now focusing a little bit more on writers who do not get seen, on writers who you know nothing about, writers that you will never know anything about because they have been whitewashed and they have been wiped off you know, so the surface of like literary work, since they do not have the aesthetics that pleases readers in many ways. So it's like, you know, so I make it a habit to read those writers.
Henri, thank you so much. Thank you for all the recommendations, and thank you so much for being here today. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast. I hope it was worth it for you as well.
Yes, it was. And for everyone listening, the things that Henri and I talked about just now, maybe if there's something that spoke to you, I would say just start the process immediately if you have the time, or tomorrow. Start writing, start listening to people actively, or if there is something that really spoke to you, tell someone else about this episode, or just tell someone else about what you have learned and share it. And if you did not learn anything new, that is also okay. Thank you for listening, and tune in next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks goes to Coco for the creative support and the logo design. And also thanks to Vulcan Recorder for the music contribution. You can listen to the podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast distribution apps on your phone. The next episode will be released in 1 week or 2 weeks. Bye-bye.